If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Thanks for joining me this evening. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, welcoming you to another edition of Wrestling Night in America, where we will talk all about the upcoming big shows coming down the pike in WWE, including WWE Evolution, the first all-women's pay-per-view taking place next month. Plus, we also have Super Showdown in Australia, WWE Network exclusive, that will be happening in a couple of weeks. And as well, I'll have the intro again. That's how special this show is. We need two intros for this show. Or maybe that was the intro for my co-host, who I will bring on right now, PWTorch.com contributor Frank Pediani. Frank, thanks for joining me. You get your own intro tonight. How about that?
I feel special, Greg. It's amazing. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this. And hopefully we have enough time to cover everything, as we have quite a bit of stuff coming up.
Yeah, like I was saying, we've got the Super Showdown, we've got Evolution, we've got, as was officially announced Monday night on Raw by Constable Baron Corbin, WWE Crown Jewel, the second major Saudi Arabia show that will be taking place. And the date on that one, as I refer to my notes, is November 2nd, so it's just over a month away right now. Obviously not a lot announced for that show yet. A lot will depend on what happens at Super Showdown, which is a loaded card that we'll get to a little later on in the show. But first, I wanted to start off talking about the big New Japan show that happened early this morning. I haven't gotten a chance to sit down and see it yet, Destruction in Kobe, but I did want to make a note of the main event and the major post-match angle that took place following that match. It was a number one contender match for the IWGP title between Tanahashi and Okada. It went a half an hour with Tanahashi getting the victory. After the match, Jay White, a fellow member of Chaos, along with Okada, came out and attacked both men. Gedo, Okada's longtime second, actually sided with Jay White and attacked Okada after the match, something that I don't know that anyone saw coming. And Jay White pronounced himself the new leader of the Chaos group, and has made a bid for Tanahashi's opportunity that he has at the IWGP title by virtue of his win in the G1. So, Frank, I know you're somewhat of a New Japan novice, I think. I hope I'm not insulting you with that moniker. But what is your instant reaction kind of to Gedo turning on Okada after their longtime partnership?
That's, from what I've watched, it's certainly something I didn't see coming. And if he sided with Jay White, I know they just recently gave him the Switchblade gimmick, which was a little bit of a change up for him. So I just wonder if they might go the way of maybe him beating Tanahashi and getting the championship opportunity at the Wrestle Kingdom. I mean, I don't know if I would want to do that, considering, and correct me if I'm wrong, Tanahashi did win the G1 tournament, correct? He did
yes.
Win that this year? He
yep.
did. So, I mean, I don't know if you want to erode that. I mean, you know, I know usually the winner of that gets the championship opportunity, but I don't know. Maybe they see something in Jay White, and perhaps they could go in that direction. It's certainly something that I'll pay attention to now that you brought it up, for sure.
Yeah, the thing with Jay White is I don't want to say he's been protected, but he's a guy who it's pretty clear that New Japan has big things in store for, just based on his booking throughout the G1, just based on, you know, him getting the Switchblade gimmick. They didn't abandon his push when it didn't get over to the extent that maybe they expected when they first gave him the gimmick. It was a bit of a slow burn for him to get over with the audience with that gimmick. Mm-hmm. And I think he's gotten to the point now where he's getting real heel heat from the fans. It's not just this go-away heat that he might have had when he first adopted the gimmick. So, you know, New Japan, their patience with him has been rewarded and has been paid off by the fans reacting more to him like a major star. And it looks like New Japan is deciding that, hey, you know, let's ride this. You know, their top stars are not real young, and with the New Japan style, they've got a lot of mileage on those bodies. And I think New Japan and Gedo are recognizing that it's time to invest in the younger guys. And I think that's part of the reason for this Jay White push. You know, from what you've seen of Jay White, Frank, and I'll speak for myself first, you know, he can certainly bring it in the ring. You know, he has taken that character and made it his own, and that Switchblade character comes out when he's wrestling. It's not just a character that he has when he walks to the ring or when he does promos, and then he kind of wrestles as Jay White. He has embodied that character from bell to bell as well.
Oh, absolutely, Greg. What I saw in the G1 San Francisco show that took place back in July, I don't remember who we fought. I want to say it was Juice Robinson. I could be mistaken about that. Maybe that was Strong Style involved. I watched both. But I enjoyed both matches, and he's definitely one of the guys that jumped out to me. So, I mean, if they're going in that direction, I don't think it's a bad idea. Now, I certainly hope they wouldn't do a triple threat match. Based on your experience watching New Japan, I mean, could they go the way of, you know, slotting him in? If Tanahashi is supposed to get this shot at Kenny Omega at Wrestle Kingdom, could they insert Jay White into a triple threat, or is that just not New Japan's thinking?
That's not New Japan's style to do that. Okay. I would assume somewhere between now and January we may get a Jay White versus Tanahashi match, to where Tanahashi's shot will be on the line again, similar to what it was against Okada here. But even if there's a non-finish or a disputed finish in Jay White versus Tanahashi, it would surprise me. It would certainly signal the Americanization of New Japan, and it would be the latest example of that if they were to book a triple threat, because they've stayed away from those types of matches for so long. So, especially for Wrestle Kingdom, when it is their biggest show, I would assume they would fall back to the one-on-one match.
True, and you know what, too? You brought up something really key, is if they're trying to get more of an American footing, then a guy like Jay White, you know, could be the guy. You know, if you have a match with him in Omega, that could be a certain, you know, hook to get people in the States to watch who might not be familiar with guys like Tanahashi, Okada, and stuff like that. So, I mean, if it's not a slam dunk that the winner of the G1 gets a title match and they want to do a number one contenders match between Tanahashi and White, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, from what I've seen with Jay White, I've been impressed. So sign me up.
Absolutely. 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you would like to talk about any of the big events that we're talking about here on Wrestling Night in America. Before we get any further, Frank, for those of you listening who may not be familiar with his recent contributions to PWTorch.com, Frank, I'll let you tell our listeners what it is you do for the Torch.
Sure. So on Monday and Tuesday, the Raw and SmackDown primers drop, usually about 1, 2 o'clock. I usually try to get things wrapped up by lunchtime and get them off to Wade. And I'm kind of looking at Twitter, and I'm looking around just to see what's going on, if there's any injuries and stuff like that, anything that might kind of give us an idea as to what's going on in the show. Thus far, tomorrow night, we already have 3 matches for Raw, which I tweeted out yesterday. It was such a pleasure because, for some reason, Raw never knows what they're doing until the day of, maybe even the night of. But SmackDown, though, like 2 days in advance. You know, like Paige, even though she doesn't know it, Paige is my new best friend because she's always tweeting out matches on over the weekend, you know, and so it makes my life a lot easier. So, the Raw and SmackDown primers, Monday and Tuesday, check them out.
Yeah, absolutely. PWTorch.com is where you can find Frank's previews of both Raw and SmackDown every week at the Torch. And then stick around and read Wade Keller's recaps of Raw and SmackDown in real time as they happen. for PWTorch.com and VIP members of the Torch. Before we go to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about Monday Night Raw, what's upcoming, what we've experienced this past Monday, because this past Monday was a very important show. We were coming off of Hell in a Cell. We had a lot of speculation, and right here on Wrestling Night in America on the Hell in a Cell post-show last Sunday night, that was the question that was on everybody's mind was, with the return of Brock Lesnar on Sunday and his interference in the Braun Strowman-Roman Reigns match, what does that mean for the Universal title going forward? Where would Brock Lesnar conceivably get a title shot, knowing that he's still looking at a possible UFC fight in January? Where do we go from here with the Universal title? That question was answered on Monday Night Raw when Baron Corbin made a triple threat for the Crown Jewel show in Saudi Arabia on November 2nd. It will be Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman both challenging Roman Reigns in a triple threat match for the Universal title at that show. I believe Craig from Toledo was a caller who nailed that scenario last Sunday night here on Wrestling Night in America.
Did.
So I'll give him credit for that right here on the show. But, you know, we had the non-finish inside the cell last Sunday night. That was a pretty downer ending to what was almost universally praised as a pretty positive show overall. You know, Frank, watching Monday Night on Raw, watching Baron Corbin make that announcement for Crown Jewel, I know Craig from Toledo wasn't surprised. Were you surprised at the announcement of the triple threat for Saudi Arabia? What were the other options out there, do you think, that WWE could have taken, knowing, you know, with Lesnar being involved at Hell in a Cell, what were the other options, do you think, on the table for a Universal title match going forward?
I figured that was exactly what they were going to do. I wasn't shocked for one second because, not for nothing, it seems like this company works for the Saudis now. And I don't want to make this an international thing, but, you know, that's pretty much what I expected. I mean, you could have gone other ways. You could have had, you know, Strowman demand his rematch against Reigns that night. I mean, where was that? There was no outrage about that. There was no outrage about him wasting his Money in the Bank contract.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty much swept under the carpet. You know, Roman Reigns didn't seem to care. He was just like, yep, I'm still the Universal Champion, so thumbs up. So, you know, I might have had a number one contenders match between Strowman and Lesnar, because in storyline, Strowman did want to get after Lesnar. So considering Lesnar deserved a rematch for the Universal Championship since he lost at SummerSlam, and considering he interfered in the match at Hell in a Cell, you could have had a match between the two. But I know that would cost WWE a fortune. So honestly, Greg, because of the circumstances and the way things are set up, I don't think there was another option unless they were going to do this at Survivor Series, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's clear to me that the Saudis wanted this. They wanted this match. They want to kill two birds with one stone because, you know, they only have limited dates with Brock. So let's do this for the Saudi prince. Let's throw everybody in one pot, and away we go. And then we'll figure out what we're doing going forward after Crown Jewel.
And I think you also hit on something that is a problem throughout WWE and has been for so long. When there's no finish to the Hell in a Cell match and Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman both come out the next night and don't seem all that bothered by it, especially, as you mentioned, Strowman, who
right.
used that match to cash in his Money in the Bank contract, maybe, you know,
mm-hmm.
he's appeased by the fact that he's going to get another shot at Crown Jewel, although in WWE's statistical world, he has a less of a chance to win there than if he was facing Roman Reigns one-on-one. And Reigns, you know, as a babyface, you would think he would want to say, well, you know, I'm not happy even though I regained the Universal title because I didn't win. and I want to win fair and square, and Brock Lesnar didn't allow me to prove I was the better man than Braun Strowman. Instead, they pivoted immediately to Brock Lesnar and what's next for him and where does he fit into the Universal title, and moving right on to the triple threat match at Crown Jewel. And I think that's part of the issue with having so many shows to plug and with having shows, 3-hour shows every week, is it's immediately on to the next thing, and it's on to the next thing before the previous thing is even fully allowed to breathe. There just wasn't time to reflect on the win and loss and the lack thereof in that match at Hell in a Cell, because boom, you had to move on to the next thing. And that's going to get worse before it gets better in WWE, especially with these major shows now taking place overseas. We've seen the one in Australia. We're seeing the big deal in Saudi Arabia. So I'm afraid that what we're seeing now, when we look down the road here at the major shows coming up, that's going to be more of the norm than just a bump in the road.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
The international, Greg, is where the money is at.
Right?
I mean, that's where the big money is. That's where the big ticket stuff is. I mean, not to compare it to the airlines, because that's even where it is for the airlines. It's all overseas. It's all international. And the same applies to WWE, who, by the way, should change their initials to MRLG. You know what MRLG stands for? Make Roman Look Good. All right? And everything circles back. If you look at this whole picture, Greg, okay, everything circles back to make Roman look good. We got to have Dolph and Drew come out. We got to have Seth and Dean come out. Everybody's got to climb the cage. Mm-hmm. And somehow, you know, Roman and Strowman will lay it out for 10, 15 minutes. God knows why. And I saw Jason from Australia tweet that out. And then we got to have the spot. We got to have the non-finish. And then Monday night, honestly, Greg, I wrote the primer today. I had a headache writing it because of all the stuff that I had to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, between all the interference on Monday night, everything we just talked about. And it's just, it's crazy, you know. And, you know, not to kind of dovetail here for a second, but, you know, you had two guys this year that were on fire, Rollins and Strowman, all right? Mm-hmm. And what did WWE do? Remember that Ice Bucket Challenge a few years ago? That's exactly what they did to Rollins and Strowman. Yeah, guys, we're going to need you to go ahead and not be as hot because, yeah, Seth, we need you to go into the Shield and make sure that Roman gets cheered.
Mm-hmm.
And Strowman, yeah, we know you're popular, but, yeah, we're going to need you to turn heel, and we're going to do a crap job of it. So that way, nobody wants to cheer for you when you have a match with Roman. I mean, it's just unbelievable the lengths to which this company is going to get this guy cheered. And that's, you know, like you said, the storytelling, not following up on things. There's no consistency, no outrage by the wrestlers, nothing, and making Roman Reigns look good. It's becoming problematic, and it's a dark cloud over the show, for real.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed the Office Space reference there as well in your mini rant. So kudos to you on that. Turning our attention turning our attention back to this past Monday on Raw. In addition to Lesnar getting his Universal title rematch in Saudi Arabia, we also had Drew McIntyre defeat Dean Ambrose, and then later on in the show, Seth Rollins defeat Dolph Ziggler. Classic 50-50 booking of those two feuding teams. We also had Chad Gable defeat Victor of the Ascension in singles action. It was announced that Kane would be in The Undertaker's corner versus Triple H in Australia. Bayley defeated Dana Brooke. The AOP won a squash match. The Riot Squad attacked Ronda Rousey. Elias defeated Lashley by disqualification. We have Leo Rush now as the manager of Lashley. We had Nia Jax make her return to team with Ember Moon, defeating Mickie James and Alicia Fox, and Roman Reigns defeated Baron Corbin in a match that was for the Universal title, actually. So a couple things I want to make note of here, Frank, is Kane being in Undertaker's corner, Shawn Michaels to be in Triple H's corner in Australia. A lot of hints being laid down that Shawn Michaels is going to come back maybe at Saudi Arabia and make a return to the ring, whether it's in singles action or tag action. Is that how you see this playing out, this match between Taker and Triple H at Australia? Does this lead to Shawn Michaels' in-ring return?
I think it's fair. I think that's possible. I mean, I don't know, you know, how up for things he is right now in terms of having a singles match. So, you know, doing a tag match with Triple H against Undertaker and Kane, I mean, that's safe. I mean, these guys know each other. They go back how many years? And, you know, I agree with Todd Martin, who brought this up on The Fix. You know, it could be a way for Michaels to test himself out to see, hey, you know what? Am I really up for this? Because if you think about it, Greg, if he does a singles match and it's a stinker, you know, he takes a lot of pride in what he does. So I don't think he wants to put himself in that situation. At least if he's with Triple H, and at least if they're working with Undertaker and Kane, it's a safe way to go. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you go from there. You want to do something at WrestleMania? You know, that's fine. I think that's a completely possible outcome for what we see in Australia.
And of course, The Fix with Todd Martin. You can find that each week on PWTorch.com. For VIP members, one of the many VIP audio shows that are available, PWTorch.com/GoVIP if you are not a member. I also want to ask you about the now partnership between Lio Rush and Lashley. Lio Rush debuted in NXT, only had a handful of TV matches under his belt before he was called up and added to the 205 Live roster. And then the previous Monday, we saw him confront Lashley while Lashley was working out on Raw. And then this week, Rush joined Lashley when Lashley came to the ring. Lio Rush got to show off his excellent athleticism that he has. What do you make of this partnership between Rush and Lashley? Do you think Rush is going to wrestle frequently on Raw, or is he just a manager for Lashley and he'll continue to appear on 205 Live, similar to Drake Maverick? How do you see this relationship developing?
So I got to be fair. I messaged Zach Haydorn as soon as I saw this, and I said, Zach, what the heck is going on here? What is Lio Rush doing on Raw managing Bobby Lashley? I have to say, since I sent that message, it's actually grown on me a little bit. I think it's something that could work. As far as him wrestling, I've been kind of wondering about that with Drake and Lio coming over. Are we going to start to see a bleed over of 205 Live again? I mean, it really doesn't make much sense to me if they're filming 205 Live on Tuesday. You know what I mean? And airing it on Wednesday night, I don't really see how that works. I mean, I would think they'd want to do that on SmackDown, but that being said, I could see him actually being an effective mouthpiece for Lashley, but I think it works better if Lashley turns heel, because judging just by what I saw in Impact, and, you know, I don't know if everybody listening, you know, watches Impact, but judging from what I saw in Impact, he's definitely a better heel, and I think as a mouthpiece, I think Lio works better as a heel, and it's something that it's grown on me, and I think it could actually work.
And you mentioned messaging Zach Haydorn. Haydorn, also PWTorch.com contributor with his VIP audio show On the Canvas with Zach Haydorn each and every week on PWTorch.com. Frank, you've got this audio stuff down. You know how to get in these plugs for all this Torch stuff to let me plug away. So I appreciate that, and I'm sure Wade appreciates that too.
It's no problem. You guys, you know, listen, you guys are really good guys, and, you know, whatever I can do to help out, you know, it's a pleasure to do. So, yeah, absolutely, no problem.
This coming week on Raw, Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre take on the Revival in a tag title match, Lashley versus Elias, and Brie Bella versus Ruby Riott in a match that will build to their six-woman tag match at in Australia. So Without giving away your preview of Raw, Frank, any of those matches really stand out to you as something that you're looking forward to tomorrow night?
I do have to say I'm looking forward to the Revival and Ziggler and McIntyre. We never really got a follow-up on the attack. When Ziggler and McIntyre went off when they attacked the Revival. The same night that the Shield got arrested, you know, Ziggler and McIntyre do the same thing and they get a title match. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that? WWE booking. So I'm interested to see how WWE follows up on that. Especially because you really have no babyface teams at the moment. I don't know what's going on with the B team. We haven't seen them since they lost the title, and I can't see them, you know, going back to them and giving them this magical run. If you want to count Bobby Roode and Chad Gable as a formidable team, go ahead, because I don't think that's going to work out long term. I could see this as a Roode turning Bobby Roode heel. So where are your tag teams? I mean, that kind of leaves the Revival. If they're going to turn babyface, I mean, I suppose I could get into it. I guess I'm more intrigued by it. I don't know that I'm necessarily interested, but I'm intrigued because I grew up with tag teams. I know you started a little bit later, but you were still kind of in the era when you started watching, Greg, of tag teams. So I like a team like the Revival. You know, I like what they bring, but that really doesn't fit. That really doesn't fit today's product. So, you know, it is what it is, but I'm intrigued to see where that goes for sure.
Could you imagine the Raw tag team division without the Shield having gotten back together, or without Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre having formed a somewhat unlikely alliance, especially now that Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy seem to no longer be a team, with Matt Hardy all but retiring from the ring?
How about Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas teaming up? How about we do that? And somehow we acknowledge that they're brothers. I mean, you know, if they're not going to have the B team together anymore. Hey, you know what? You could do the B team, the Bray team, right? That works. You could do Bray and Bo, and I mean, Curtis would be left out if he's C, but it's the B team managed by Bray. You know, if you want to do that, get creative. It seems to me like you know what the tag team division is? It's the designated hitter in baseball. When you don't have a position for somebody, you just make them the designated hitter, and that's what the tag team division is now. It's a way station. It's
That is spoken like a true National League fan right there.
National League, like you and I.
Yep.
Like you and I. Mm-hmm. By the way, how do you feel? Let's talk about baseball. How do you feel about the DH? Would you want to see it in the National League or no? Are you a purist? You like old school?
No, I'm okay with no DH, and I fully realize that I'm going to have to accept probably in the next few years that the National League will probably adopt the designated hitter, especially if the offense continues to dwindle throughout baseball. I read a story that I think this is going to be the first year where there are more strikeouts than hits offensively. So if offense continues to dwindle, I think that the National League will adopt the DH sooner rather than later. So I'll just enjoy my last few fleeting years of watching pitchers flail at the ball while they're trying to hit.
Exactly. I wouldn't have any more Bartolo Colon home run moments.
No, I know. and you know, Dontrell Willis for the Marlins all those years ago. I mean, I loved watching him hit. He could hit a few home runs. I think he hit one or two against the Mets too. No offense, but
probably.
Anyway, 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to talk to me and Frank. Make sure you press 1 to show up in the dashboard here as I look to make sure that you show up and want to talk. Otherwise, you are free to just listen. So we will go to our first call of the evening. It is 814 Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
Hello. First question I have for you is, what type of match could we see next year in Saudi Arabia that we aren't expecting, say, like a boxing match between Mr. T and Mike Tyson, because this prince seems to throw a lot of money around and we ought to get matches we aren't expecting.
Yeah, you know, they keep raising the bar for the Saudi Arabia shows and the matches that they put on them to the point where, you know, it's the card starts to resemble a WrestleMania, Frank. And because there are mm-hmm. a few more years left in the deal, we're going to get to a point where it's going to be hard for WWE to top itself. So do you mm-hmm. see them inventing a match type that they can do at Saudi Arabia to almost like a Royal Rumble? We saw the greatest Royal Rumble, but that was just a takeoff of the Royal Rumble. Is there a match type out there that hasn't been done before in pro wrestling, or is there a match type that they can make exclusive to the Saudi Arabia show to make it more special?
Absolutely, and I have the two combatants, Conor McGregor and Brock Lesnar.
Oh. Well, the problem is the problem is the Saudi prince seems stuck back in the early 1990s. He wanted Undertaker, he wanted Yokozuna, he wanted some of those names. So, you know, as Ryan said, you may have to go back to the Mike Tysons and the Evander Holyfields to really whet the appetite of the Saudi crown prince.
True. Well, yeah, dig up one of the. Well, there you go. Dig up one of those guys and stick them against Brock Lesnar. There you go.
Man.
I just say Conor McGregor and Brock Lesnar because that would be something different. You know, I mean, you want to make it an octagon. You know, I mean, if they want to build an octagon exclusive for the Saudis, sure, why not? I mean, they're getting paid. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head of who else could do something like this. I had another name in mind, and it escaped. Oh, yeah, Floyd Mayweather. Mm-hmm. Remember when they had Floyd Mayweather against Big Show? There you go.
Yeah.
Do something like that. Floyd Mayweather against Brock Lesnar. There you go.
Getting Floyd and Connor would certainly test the bounds of how much money WWE really is willing to throw at people for these events, because we know that they're mm-hmm. getting a lot of money from the Saudi government for doing these shows. But at a certain point, you want that profit margin to be a little higher than if you're throwing, you know, Floyd and Connor, the kind of money it would require for them to make an appearance here. So, I get the overall point that Ryan is making, where it would make these shows feel different if you did have some sort of gimmick match. Sort of similar to, you know, Elimination Chamber matches happen only at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-views. Hell in a Cell matches generally only happen at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-views. Same with the Royal Rumble, same with the Survivor Series, the Elimination-style tags. Could you think of something maybe to do mm-hmm. at the Saudi shows? I think that would be a good way of doing things going forward so that you're not making it feel like the second WrestleMania, unless that's how WWE wants it to feel. So, Ryan, back to you.
War Games.
War Games,
by the way, is another one.
Yeah.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
My second question is on Daniel Bryan. I don't know if you're aware of this, but Daniel Bryan claims in his book that the Mike at wrestling school, he paid money in advance and they never gave him his money back when the school closed down. Are there any other wrestlers this happened to? Do you know why the wrestlers didn't get their money back?
Well, if the school closed down, that probably told me that there was no money to give back, that the school didn't have the funds to continue. So even if they decided to take the wrestling school to court, you're probably going to be spending more than you're going to end up making anyway in court fees and everything like that. Are you talking about the Shawn Michaels Wrestling School?
No, I'm talking about the Dean Malenko, Jim Malenko, and Great Malenko school down in Florida.
Florida.
I thought you might have been familiar with that because I think
okay.
you're from down that area.
Yeah, I don't know who else that would have affected. I mean, I did read the Daniel Bryan book, so you know, I recall that the story. I couldn't remember which one it was because I know Shawn Michaels' school didn't last very long either. But you know, that's kind of the risk you take, Frank, when you try to break into the pro wrestling business. As mainstream as wrestling has gotten, it's still at the entry level. I think there's a lot of shysters out there who, you know, who want to make a buck off of a kid who wants to learn the tricks of the trade. So it's the responsibility of the person trying to get in the business to really look at what wrestling schools are out there, what's worth the money, what ones have a history of churning out competent wrestlers, and ones that aren't kind of fly-by-night operations.
Well, I can't speak to wrestling schools, but I could certainly speak to flight schools. All right, when I was flight instructing, I heard all kinds of horror stories about schools taking money from students, and then they close up shop, you know, for whatever reason, wouldn't give them money back. I mean, I think stuff like that happens everywhere, you know, in any kind of endeavor. So, yeah, I mean, that's and even not for nothing, you know, I know this isn't Ryan's question, but didn't TNA hold a lot of money from people? Didn't a lot of guys not get paid when they were at TNA over the Dixie Carter years? I mean, I heard stories of, I don't know if it was AJ Styles or whoever it was, but, you know, I heard Dixie Carter held up a lot of people for money, too, you know, through those years when she was running the show over there.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd use the term holding them up for money. I know that there was a lot of late payments. I know that production, people almost went on strike because they weren't getting paid. And a lot of people who left Impact at various times did so because they were so late on payments. And, you know, that's part of the wrestling business. It happened with ECW with Paul Heyman. I mean, Heyman is notorious for not paying guys, and former ECW wrestlers will still joke about that today.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm giving any advice to anyone wanting to break into the wrestling business, my first piece of advice would be do your research. Know what you're getting into, know the kind of business you're getting into, and know what school you're going to and its track record. I think that's very important. Ryan, back to you for your third question.
The third question is about a show I went to last weekend in Berkeley Springs, West Virginia. There was a kid on the show that won the world title. He might only be 17 years old because his Facebook page says that he still goes to high school. He's now the world champion of that federation. So my question is, who is like the youngest current world champion for a indie federation? I thought Maria Manic might have had the record when she won the title at 18 for heavy pro wrestling. That was a female title years ago. So I wonder if there's anyone younger than 17 that's a world champion.
Yeah, I don't follow the indies close enough to be able to give you an answer on that. I would say that if, in fact, this person that you saw is still in high school, there's a very good chance that he is the youngest world champion. I can't imagine anyone younger being out there and part of the indies. But that's some nice swag to wear to school on Monday, is wear the championship title around your waist. That would be pretty neat, but... Frank, I mean, young world champions, it's a risk, but on the other hand, I think it would be an interesting way to get some publicity to that indie wrestling company if you put it out there that, hey, I've got a high schooler who's world champion in this company. I think that would kind of be one of those human interest stories that a newspaper or a local TV station would be interested in, and then boom, you've got some free media there for your company.
I have a vision for my son in 15 years. In 15 years, I'm going to get a world title around him. He'll be 17 in 15 years. So I'll get the world championship around him. And if we're still in the Farmingdale School District, away we go. yeah, I'm not – I mean, I'm actually on I'm on Progress's Wikipedia page. I don't know. I don't even know who their champion is. Nathan Cruz. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'll default to what Ryan saw this weekend. So, Ryan, as always, thanks for the call, and I hope to hear from you again next week.
Okay, thanks for taking my call, and I can't guarantee he's still in high school, but according to the Facebook page, it says he's still in high school.
Okay, well, I've never known Facebook to lie. So, wait a minute. That's not true. So, but we'll take their word for it in this instance. Frank, moving now to SmackDown on Tuesday night. As you mentioned, Paige on Twitter made official the AJ Styles Samoa Joe contract signing for their match in Australia will take place this Tuesday night on SmackDown. So far, that is the big draw for the show. This past week on SmackDown, we had Miz TV with Daniel Bryan, and Maryse was there. She faked an injury and after Bryan's Miz TV attack, so that continued to build heat for that feud. Cesaro defeated Kofi Kingston in singles action. Shinsuke Nakamura over Rusev to retain the U.S. title. Aiden English turned on Rusev. AJ Styles defeated Andrade Cien Almas. Asuka over Billy Kay. And Becky Lynch's championship coronation was the main event segment of this show, where she attacked Charlotte Flair, who came out to confront her. So a lot going on SmackDown last week, Frank. First, I want to ask you about the implosion of Rusev Day and Aiden English's turn on Rusev. I guess my question is, first of all, was the timing right for this to take place? Because I think there was always the suspicion that Rusev Day was not long for this world, that they would eventually break up. And did they get the characters right? Aiden English apparently being a heel and Rusev is the babyface. Was this the right dynamic to play off of in this breakup?
I think it's fine. I mean, I think Rusev at this point needs a babyface run. So, you know, having him go babyface, I think, is the right call. I mean, as far as Aiden English, I don't know what his feeling is. I mean, I think as a heel, it could be, you know, probably mid-card at best, you know, probably around the U.S. Title level. So it's fine. I mean, I don't think I would have wanted to see Rusev go back to being a heel, you know, the way he was earlier in the year. What was the other question? Oh, yeah, as far as the timing is concerned, I don't know what the timing was on this, to be honest with you, because it's been going on for so long. You know, I mean, this has been going on now for, what, 2 or 3 months? And every week there was a different dynamic. I mean, you remember that on SmackDown. You know, Rusev was acting like the heel, English was the babyface, and it was the other way around, and you just didn't know what to think. So as far as the timing, I'll say the timing is good because I'm glad it's over with, and I'm glad we're finally going in a different direction. So,
To that point, Frank, did WWE miss the train on taking advantage of Rusev at the height of his popularity, or do you still think that he's at the point where they can capitalize on him for a top singles run on SmackDown?
I think they might have missed the boat on that because he was a little more popular earlier in the year. I mean, I'll never forget the one episode where – do you remember the Duly Noted episode, all right, when Shane McMahon said Duly Noted? And the fans were chanting Rusev Day.
Yeah.
And he looked at the crowd and said Duly Noted.
Yeah.
We didn't see Rusev for like 2 or 3 weeks after that. So, you know, I'm glad you asked me the question in that way. Because, yeah, then maybe the timing wasn't right because I think they, you know, might have missed the boat. Although, I will throw in, I was at SmackDown in Brooklyn, and that crowd was hot for Rusev. I mean, there was a huge Rusev Day chant throughout the night. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say. We'll just have to play the waiting game and see if they I mean, they got no baby faces on SmackDown at this point right now. So, you know, by default, he might actually still have a chance to be over.
So Andrade Cien Almas gets another shot at AJ Styles here. Styles gets the victory. We've seen Almas now twice face AJ Styles, and this was another really good match on Tuesday night. Almas was sort of involved for a little while with Rusev and Lana and with Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella because they have the dynamic of Almas and Zelina Vega. But what do you make of Almas facing AJ Styles again here? And is this a sign that maybe they don't have big plans for him right now because they're putting him in a spot where Styles goes over and then the focus shifts to Styles and Samoa Joe afterward? Or do you think this is a sign that something big is on the horizon because they are putting him in there with someone the stature of AJ Styles and Almas is having a competitive match with the long-term WWE champion?
More the latter, Greg, with the concern of the previous. I would think – that's my phone, by the way. I would think putting him in matches with AJ Styles like they have and putting him in matches with Daniel Bryan is an indication that they do have big plans for him. But then I also get concerned that he's going to be the super jobber to the stars. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you need a big match on SmackDown or, you know, you need a championship match at, you know, one of the B pay-per-views or whatever. Oh, we'll just use Almas. You know, he's a really good wrestler and he's got a really good work rate and all that stuff. So we'll just use him. And, you know, he could be going down that path. So I guess I remain cautiously optimistic about his future at this point.
And I think that's the best way to do it. I think he's proven, and there are reports that Vince McMahon has been impressed by Almas. So I think he's done everything that's been asked of him and done it well on the main roster so far. His association with Zelina Vega mm-hmm. will just open up opportunities for him on the main roster that otherwise wouldn't be there if it was just him. So I think they'll continue to use him in high-leverage situations, in important situations. And, you know, I tweeted this out at Greg M. Parks is where you can follow me on Twitter, but I tweeted this out during SmackDown on Tuesday that I think Almas versus AJ Styles is going to be a title feud in 2019 at some point. We're going to be seeing that match on pay-per-view. So that's my hope anyway. So like you, I would say I'm pretty cautiously optimistic about that.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
My last bit of SmackDown stuff that I want to talk about before we go back to the phones is the Becky Lynch Charlotte Flair deal at the end. And I think we've gone back and forth about, you know, Becky Lynch coming off as a heel and Becky Lynch not coming off as a heel, coming off as more of a babyface. And there's just this back and forth. And I think at this point we just have to kind of say, well, I guess she is whatever you want her to be. You know, there's no sense in mm-hmm. reading into how WWE is booking her because it changes week to week, whether she comes across more heelish or more babyface-ish. So I think it's a fruitless mm-hmm. endeavor to look at how she comes across on TV and try to read into it and try to read into WWE's booking plans of her based on that. I think it's just, hey, if you like Becky Lynch, cheer. If you don't, boo her. I think that's kind of where we are with this. Is that how you saw not only that main event segment, but the booking overall since her turn at SummerSlam?
So, as you probably remember, I was dead against it. I was there the night that she gave the initial speech after SummerSlam. I was dead against her turning heel and keeping Charlotte babyface. Since then, and I'm going to do another plug here, I have to credit Interview Friday with Wade Keller when he had Kevin Eck on. It's something different, you know? And I was kind of like, I was leaning in that direction, and then when I heard that, that's when it clicked for me. It really is something different. I mean, you got to think about it. If you turned Charlotte heel and you kept Becky Lynch the same character, we've seen that before. We saw that back in 2015, whatever it was, after Charlotte came up from the main roster. and she turned heel. She basically won out the feud with Becky. So if they did the same thing again, I think the expectation would be the same. By doing this, I think this makes Becky a bigger star. You know, her being a heel, I don't necessarily have a problem with it. She could pull it off. I mean, she's certainly believable, okay? The problem is you have the crowd cheering her, and you have the crowd not necessarily cheering Charlotte. I mean, there's still people that like Charlotte, but they're not necessarily cheering Charlotte. But Becky's become a bigger star because of it. And the person I'll go right back to is Stone Cold in 97, okay? If you remember, Stone Cold was stunning everybody on the planet, and all the fans did was cheer. So they had no choice but to make him a babyface. So I think that's eventually what they'll do with Becky. And honestly, by doing it this way, I think she's a bigger star. I mean, she might even be a bigger star than Charlotte. I mean, I don't know if she's a bigger star than Charlotte, but she might be on the same level now that she's had this character change.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. I still think that promo and the way it was worded the two nights after SummerSlam was a mistake, and I'll go to my grave holding on to that. I think they could have done a better job of having her not attack the fans, but still keep everything else in that promo the same.
Right.
I still think that was the mistake, and I think that's what sent people that sent people on this wild goose chase, thinking complaining and saying that they don't want Becky Lynch to be a heel. I think if you had given her that same promo and just taken out the part where she attacks the fans, I think most people would have been fine with it. So everything else I agree with, but that's still something that sticks with me that I think was a mistake on WWE's end. And I think it's just, I think it's just second nature for them to do that now, because that is so often a part of the heel turn promo where in order to cement that turn, mm-hmm. they go after the fans. But this was a situation unlike a lot of their turns, and they should have read it that way.
Think about this, though. Think about this. And I agree with you, because I didn't like it either. But it might have actually worked out in their favor, because maybe by her saying that, the fans could see through it, and they could see through WWE's booking, and they cheer her even more. And that's what makes her a bigger star in the long run. So I'm not giving WWE credit by any mistake. I agree with you. I didn't like that part. I agree with you. I didn't like that part, but it might actually work in her favor in the long run in a crazy, perverse way.
I don't know, Frank. I don't like that you're trying to get me to understand or to soften my stance on that. I'm rock solid against it. I don't want you to shake one of the tenets of my wrestling fandom and belief system. So. We'll just leave it there for now.
So you're all in.
Well, on this I am, yes.
You're all in on that, right?
I am. And we'll move on to the phones with the 111 area code. Let's see if this is Craig from Toledo here to gloat. Is this Craig?
This is Craig.
Okay.
Did I never gloat?
Yeah, well, come on now.
I feel like
you went on Twitter to gloat after Monday night.
Yeah, I got no likes on that. I got no likes.
I don't know. What are you talking about? I liked it. What are you talking about? I can open a beer now that you're on, man. What's going on, Craig?
Absolutely. I'm watching my Lions. I'm having a good old time.
I got it on the screen as we speak.
There we go. No spoilers, because I'm on a little bit of a delay. I'm not watching on a broadcast.
You got it.
I have three things for you guys. But I want to start off with a trivia question for you. When is the last time Rusev won a pay-per-view match?
Ooh. It's a good one.
Oh, boy.
When's the last time Rusev won a pay-per-view? Wait a second.
I can just tell you.
I can hear the gears grinding in Frank's brain from all the way down here in Florida.
Why do I want to say it's like 2015 when he beat Cena?
It's 2016.
Ooh.
Wow.
Or no, yeah. It's the Battleground, July 2016. Zack Ryder.
What did he beat?
And he had the U.S. title.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Is Battleground even still a pay-per-view anymore?
Yeah, somebody brought it up on the...
Let me throw it back to you. What was the main event of that pay-per-view?
Oh, hell, I don't... I barely remember
the Shield. The Shield triple threat match.
Nice. Oh, yeah. They said that. I got this from the In This Corner podcast I was listening to with Brian Campbell. That's where I got this question from, because somebody was like, I can't believe Rusev. And then I looked it up, and I'm like, holy crap, that's right. It's been 2 years since he's won a match on
Facebook. That's crazy. Duly noted.
Because you guys were talking about Rusev.
Yeah, that that is somewhat surprising, but I guess given the way he's been booked over the last year, maybe it shouldn't be so surprising. But, yeah, go ahead, Craig, with your other points.
Yeah, my first I guess that was – I don't know if that was my first point or not, but you guys brought up Rusev, so my mind got off track on that. If there's a 40-man roster, 40 times 40 is 1,560. And if you were to combine them in tag teams and have them face off against each other, that means there's 2,433,600 potential unique matchups. 10 matches a week, that's 243,360 weeks, or 4,680 years of unique programming if you were to do all these matches. Unique matches.
I was told.
Would you
be
interested in more unique? I did all the math for you. There would be a ton. Like if you had guys facing guys that they haven't faced before, would that be like? Would you rather see a Roman Reigns versus Hell Kurt Hawkins than to have him in a tag team match against one of the guys who's going to face at the next pay-per-view to set up the pay-per-view and all that? Which would you rather see, a unique match versus someone, or a unique tag match versus someone, or would you rather see a match building to the match they're going to see in the same kind of format that they do right now in WWE?
I'll take this one first. I think the unique match idea is good in theory, but it doesn't allow you to tell stories the way that pro wrestling was meant to be. You know, believe it or not, not every hardcore wrestling fan just wants match after match after match with no story behind it. And I know that's a crutch that some who have failed in the wrestling business rely on as to why they failed. But people do, believe it or not, want stories. And in order to tell stories of feuds and of storylines, those wrestlers are going to face each other in multiple different situations. You know, Daniel Bryan versus The Miz, they've had one match. This is a story that could really stretch, and I've made this argument, could stretch into WrestleMania with as much as they have to draw from. Now, if you wanted to go the unique match route, all of a sudden Daniel Bryan versus The Miz, it happened once, and it's not going to happen again because it already happened. Well, now you're losing out on the opportunity to tell a really rich story between those two. So now instead you do, you know, Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella against The Miz and Maryse. So you do different incarnations of that match to continue building up that storyline. And that's just, I mean, that's realistically, that's wrestling 101. Match, unique matches in a vacuum can be helpful, but if there's no story behind it, if you're just throwing Kurt Hawkins on there against Roman Reigns just to be different, then there's no real advantage there versus a Roman Reigns match where it's building to him wrestling somebody else. Frank, what's your thought on this idea?
Yeah, I mostly agree. I mean, you could do different matches, you know, en route to a pay-per-view. But as long as there's some kind of logic behind it, as long as there's some kind of logic to the story, you know, instead of just, you know, throwing things out there, you know, let's say you're doing, I don't know, you're doing Roman Reigns against Kevin Owens at the next pay-per-view. I'm just, you know, making that as an example, you know, and you do Roman Reigns against Kurt Hawkins, you know, with Kevin Owens on commentary or something like that, or Kevin Owens in Kurt Hawkins' corner, you know, something like that. And maybe like an old rival of Kevin Owens. Let's just say, Finn Balor, you know, Finn Balor in Reigns' corner, just something like that. As long as it's logical and as long as it makes sense, you know, I'm on board. You know what I say to all of this? Watch NXT. You know, watch the storytelling in NXT. It makes sense. It's, you can follow it week to week. They follow up on things. I mean, I know this sounds crazy, even 205 Live. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, 205 Live at least follows, you know, they acknowledge what they did the week before or 2 weeks ago. They talk about why something is happening that particular night, and it makes sense. So, the storytelling is really what's the key to the whole thing.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Craig, follow up to that or your second or third point, depending on how you're counting them?
Well, I'm going back to right now, I'm going with the Retro Radio, the VIP Retro Radio. Another little plug for you guys. The with John Arezzi, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. And I'm going through right now, I'm in 94, right in the middle of the Owen Hart, Bret Hart thing. Mm-hmm. And if Owen Hart and Bret Hart would have been on the either side of a tag team match every week, or a six-man tag every week, or, you know, stuff like that on Raw, which they had back in 94, if they had that every week, the feud wouldn't have been that good. And you can even go back to 89 and stuff like that, and it's like these guys didn't touch.
Yeah,
the guys in the big feuds and the big things that mattered didn't touch.
Yeah, but I mean,
and
you mentioned that there was Raw back in 94, but it was 1 hour. It wasn't 3 hours. It really is a different time as far as how much content WWE is putting out to be consumed in 2018 versus 1993 or 94. So, you know, I get what you're saying, but it's a lot more difficult to do that when you have so much time, TV time to fill nowadays compared to back then.
That's true. Going back to your 205 comment, Frank, in the same vein, the how many weeks did we have to watch the Lucha House Party face the British guy? And, you know, all that, it's like the same thing every week. It's kind of the same thing, but they only have an 8-man roster. Raw and SmackDown have 40-man roster. I'm just talking about the men, by the way. That Matt, that was all men. Had nothing to do with women. So, that's 4,680 years of unique programming in Saudi Arabia. Back to 205 Live. What do you guys think about the switch to kind of a main event filming style or timing-wise? I like the switch to 7 p.m. on Wednesdays as opposed to right after SmackDown. It kind of gives it that first hour of Nitro polish.
I think it depends. I think they recorded before SmackDown this past week, so I think in the long run that will help more so than the time change. I wonder if people had gotten in the habit of, okay, 2 hours of SmackDown, then let me turn on 205 Live on whatever device I'm going to watch that in. And I wonder if it will be harder to get people to come cold to 205 Live on Wednesdays. Because I think it's easier to get in the habit of watching 205 Live when you have it after SmackDown, and you watch SmackDown and you go right into 205 Live. I think it may be more difficult if, you know, Wednesday at 7 p.m. with no lead-in, you're asking people to go to the network and watch. But I could be wrong. Frank, what's your take on that?
I can tell you this. I mean, me personally, I watch 205 Live when I get a chance. You know, I mean, I'm not sitting there, you know, going to 205 Live after SmackDown, especially after 3 hours of Raw, mm-hmm. 2 hours of SmackDown, and then, you know, the weeks you have a pay-per-view. I mean, it's too much. And, I mean, half the time we're starting late anyway because we're getting the kids to bed. So that's, you know. But, I mean, as far as everybody else, this move is interesting because I don't know how many people were really watching 205 Live after SmackDown. I don't really know. So I think most people were basically watching it, you know, when they got a chance. I could be completely wrong about that. But here's another thing I'll throw to you guys. I advocated for 205 Live, which, by the way, you can't even call it 205 Live anymore if it's, you know, taped and you're watching it a day after. I advocated for 205 Live to actually go to Full Sail and record in Full Sail because I think that audience is a little more rabid and is a little more niche, you know, and I think that they can get into 205 Live more than the SmackDown audience. I think the SmackDown audience is looking for something else. So I wonder if long-term that might actually be the plan. You know, and think about it like this. If you have 205 Live and NXT back-to-back, you know, it's now a two-hour show for that crowd. You know, you can make a little more money with that. You can raise ticket prices. You know, I'm just thinking it from a business standpoint from WWE.
Craig, back to you.
I like that they're on the road with the guys right now because, first of all, it's good. It's way better than any main event match, like, you know, whatever, Zack Ryder versus Apollo Crews, whatever you're going to get on the main event, you know, like the tune-up match. That match with – I watch 205 Live every week, but I watch everything on delay because I work nights. But that match with Cedric and Drew Gulak, that was a great match. And most of these 205 Live matches are great matches to start off the night and get the crowd fired up and everything. Mm-hmm. I like that. And it keeps them on the road and gives them opportunities, like in the terms of Leo Rush, you know, with Bobby Lashley, Drew Gulak getting involved and Drake Maverick and stuff like that. I like that they're involved on the main roster, and they're not just kind of like kind of segregated into a Full Sail pre-taped kind of thing. Because 205 Live, I mean, we mock that it's not live, but it's still weekly. Like it happened this week. As NXT goes, they tape those three at a time.
Well, I guess we just answered the question is, if a show airs on the WWE Network and no one watches it, does it still air? Craig has answered that question. It did happen this week. So thank you, Craig, for that. Anything else for us, Craig, today? And Craig disappeared. Craig did not like my joke, must be. He dropped off the line. So anyway, I guess we will go to our next talking point. We're going to break up some WWE discussion with Impact Wrestling, which has Bound for Glory coming up on October 14th. And on that evening, we are expecting another Impact takeover of Wrestling Night in America. So Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek should be along on October 14th after Bound for Glory to talk about that show with you, the callers, here on Wrestling Night in America. So far, for Bound for Glory, Eddie Edwards versus Moose, Austin Aries versus Johnny Impact for the Impact Wrestling title. The Lucha Brothers and Cage take on OVE in an OVE rules match, and LAX versus the OGs in a Concrete Jungle death match. Frank, what do you expect out of a Concrete Jungle death match?
Is that just another term for a extreme rules match or something
you
like
you
that?
You got to tune in to find out, man.
I suppose, right? I got to spend $39.99 for that one. Isn't that a six-man? Isn't Conan and King involved
Conan
in that match as well?
Conan and King will be involved in that one. That's the draw for that one.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it should be good. I mean, the story was good until Richie got run over.
Oh,
and when I saw Mike McMahon tweet that out, I said, he's got to be kidding. And I watched Impact that night, and I wrote back to him. I said, boy, you're not kidding. That man over a kid.
I think, it was so absurd that, like, a couple weeks ago, maybe it was this past week, King made a comment about, like, when he, you know when King gets fired up and he gets in promo mode, and he was talking about Richie and how they should have finished the job or something like that. And it's one of those comments where you just have to laugh at the absurdity of it. Like, he's talking about a little boy who was hit by a car. And, I mean, I love King. I mean, his character makes me laugh. I mean, he's crazy. He's done such a great job with that character.
Yeah.
I mean, the sad thing is I don't think I'm supposed to laugh at it. I'm supposed to, like, fear his intensity or whatever, but it was he entertains me, and I guess that's worth something.
Well, at the end of the night, you can have somebody say, I hope we entertain you. Didn't John Cena say that to the crowd one night?
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did.
Well, there you go.
That's
the mission.
It certainly is. And they're not afraid to say it to your face. So this coming Thursday on Impact, Sue Young and an undead maid of honor take on Kira Hogan and Allie. Brian Cage versus Jake Crist in singles action. LAX takes on the Desi Hit Squad in tag team action. Tessa Blanchard puts her knockouts title on the line against Fabi Apache, and there's a Scarlett Bordeaux announcement. Frank, what's your opinion on the announcement for Abyss going into the Impact Wrestling Hall of Fame at Bound for Glory?
Listen, I think it's deserved. I defer to you on his history. I mean, I know some of it, as I just came on board with Impact earlier in the year. But, I know I know some of his history, and it's deserving. You know, he's one of the top guys. I think he was the one. I was reading some of the history of his character, and around the time that Hogan and Bischoff got there, wasn't he the one that revealed that they were up to something? And didn't Hogan and Bischoff end up taking over the company from Dixie Carter and storyline? Wasn't Abyss the one that revealed that? If
Boy,
you remember.
He might have been. That feels like ages ago. And there was in that regime, there was just so much going on TV. It was hard to keep everything straight from week to week, let alone however many years now ago it was.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was in and out of TNA at the time. Like, I would tune it in, and then I would watch it, and I'll never forget. I would just be like, "Yep, not watching this."
Yeah.
And it would just go from storyline to storyline to storyline and turns. And they had the, Aces and Eights and Fortune and Immortal and all these stables. I'm sitting there, I'm saying, what are these people doing?
Yeah.
I thought WCW was bad, but listen, hey, Abyss is deserving. Makes me wonder, is he ever going to be in WWE? I mean, could he be the one guy that never makes it to WWE? Because if I recall, I've never seen him.
No, he hasn't. And I think he's, it used to be Jeremy Borash that we talked about as the guy who would never leave Impact, and he ended up leaving and going to NXT. But I really think Abyss, with his age, with the punishment that his body has taken in the hardcore style of matches he's had in Impact, I don't really think there would be any interest from WWE's end in him at this point. And I know he's done some backstage work with Impact Wrestling, so he is more valuable than just as an on-air performer for them.
Mm, yeah, sure.
This past week on Impact saw OVE defeat Aerostar, Laredo Kid, and Vikingo. Eli Drake over Trevor Lee. King defeated Cronus in a squash where the OGs helped him out there. And although he wanted to fight, Conan respected the ceasefire. Fabi Apache defeated Alicia Edwards. The Lucha Brothers defeated Swan and Seidel. Aries defeated Tejano, and Johnny Impact attacked an unsuspecting Aries after the match to close things out. Before we go back to the phones, I want to talk about the Mae Young Classic. So we are in the third week, and Frank, the third week this past week saw Caitlin defeat Kavita DeVee. We had Toni Storm over Ginny and Xia Li over Karen Q, as well as the main event, which for whatever reason I didn't write down of this week as I watched it a couple of hours ago. So I like this show better than the first two. Because I thought every match had a story with it. You know, you had Caitlin and Kavita DeVee. It was Caitlin on the comeback trail, you know, getting a second shot at WWE. Sure. Match was kept really basic. Wasn't a lot going on in there. But, you know, she held her own. Toni Storm over Ginny, you know, the story of these two having fought before. Toni Storm coming so close to winning the Mae Young Classic last year, getting to the semifinals, wanting another shot. Then you had Xia Li over Karen Q, two, you know, Asian Americans going at it, two women. And I thought they had a pretty decent match. Karen Q has been seen in ROH. Xia Li is in developmental, so she gets the victory here. And then the main event was Mia Yim over Allison Kay. They've crossed paths before many a time, and that was the story in this match, both having wrestled an Impact, although that was not mentioned. And this was probably one of the better matches of the tournament thus far. So Mae Young Classic, as we're nearing the end of the first round, what stood out to you about this week's offering?
Definitely Mia Yim. I think she's a candidate to go deep into the brackets here. She impressed me with the match. I mean, you know, naturally I deferred to Caitlin because she's been in WWE before. I mean, I was cheering for her. You know,
I'm a longtime fan.
But,
Caitlin.
Yeah, I mean, yes, and that's also my older daughter's name. So I'm a little biased in this regard.
Fair enough.
Although it's not spelled that. It's not spelled that way, so I think, and I have the bracket in front of me. I had to run and get the bracket because I printed it out. I think Mia Yim and Caitlin go at it, whenever that is, next week or in a couple of weeks. So, I look forward to it. I mean, I think every match has been good. You know, it's been kept short and sweet, and it's been enjoyable. So, Yim is definitely the one that stuck out to me.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on her as the tournament rolls on the WWE Network. It airs after NXT on Wednesday night.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
We go back to the phones now, to the 478 area code. This is Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to the show.
I'm doing quite well. How y'all doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in and talking to us tonight. What's on your mind?
Not too much. I would like to say that last episode of Mae Young Classic was one of the best by far I've seen, all around from start to finish. Mm-hmm. So that was a big thing about it. And to get to my questions, I was sprinkling a little New Japan for my first question to go a little bit different. How was your feeling about how Jay White and Gato have taken over Chaos and turned on Okada?
Yeah, we talked about this at the top of the show, and it was surprising to me because of how long Gato and Okada have been together. I'm intrigued to see where it goes. This isn't WWE where you see something like this and you feel like they're doing it for shock value or to hotshot something, or, you know, they're doing it without a solid plan in place. I'm confident that New Japan knows what they're doing. They know all the steps, and they may even know the end game at this point. So, you know, I think it gets over Jay White. I think it gets him over a hump here as far as being taken seriously by the fans and continuing that upward trajectory that he really built well in the G1 over the summer. So, you know, I think this is more about Jay White and about building for the future of New Japan than anything else.
Yeah, I would agree. We talked about it earlier, like you said, and, you know, I defer to you guys more in New Japan, but Jay White is definitely a guy that's stuck out to me in my limited viewing of the program. You know, and I watched G1 in San Francisco when Strong Style evolved. So, you know, there's a future there, and, you know, we'll see how it all plays out. By the way, there was one other thing on Mae Young, if I could just throw in, Toni Storm. She was another one that stood out to me this week as well. I know you mentioned that earlier, and she was the other, other person that stuck out to me. I just wanted to, I forgot to mention that earlier.
Sure. All right. Darrell, back to you.
Okay. Yeah, I think so too with Jay White. I think it is bringing it back to how Chaos used to be when Nakamura originally started. That's why I think Ishii then will probably take lead and follow behind Jay White, and it seems very refreshing. Also, this kind of takes Jay White out of the running of something that I was thinking, that he would be the guy to eventually lead the firing squad and try to take over the Bullet Club. But recently, from the interviews that they've been giving between Tanahashi praising the former leaders of the Bullet Club and telling saying how they care more about the Bullet Club as a whole than ever that Kenny Omega ever had, and how he does it, and then the shots that both were taking at each other about how he was saying Kenny Omega was just only 5 minutes, the last 5 minutes of the match, and how that's not New Japan story telling style, which is kind of different from watching New Japan and hearing somebody talk that way. But I know Tanahashi usually takes shots and hearing what Kenny Omega say. So I want to give you this, Greg. Do you think, since they're saying they're recruiting, could it be that Tanahashi, who said that he want to form his own faction and stuff like that, could he be a guy who is recruited to be the leader of the firing squad and take the Bullet Club away from Kenny Omega?
Wow. That would be a major sea change for New Japan and for Tanahashi's character. But he's getting to that age where maybe a character makeover would be best for him. Still, that's a big leap to make. I do think that the firing squad, I think they need a strong leader, because I don't really think they have one right now. And Tanahashi would certainly be that alpha strong leader. But man, that's a big... That would be a very big change of character for Tanahashi at this point in his career.
Hey, if you pull something like that off, you know, let's just say New Japan gets a better TV deal in the United States, or they want to get a stronger footing in the United States, you know, you do something big, that could, you know, that could send shockwaves through the audience. There's no question about it. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's possible.
My thinking of that, Greg and Frank, was because of when you go, I like to go back and I pay attention to what the people say. And his comments of starting a faction and how he was talking about it was the same way how he was talking about his love and respect of the former two first leaders of Prince Devitt and AJ Styles of the Bullet Club. And then when he started talking about the Bullet Club as a whole, it was talking about how he wanted his group to be. Especially when he was talking to, I forgot his name, but it'll come back to me later. But the one who's with Chaos, who Okada hit in the head, and telling him to come over and probably leave them and join him. So that's what made me start thinking that could it be Tanahashi? And at the Dome, he beats Kenny Omega, takes the title and the Bullet Club, and that could be another reform of the Bullet Club in something else.
Yeah, like I said, that would be a big shift in the dynamic of New Japan, not only Jay White taking over Chaos from Okada, but Tanahashi taking over that aspect of the Bullet Club. That would be major shuffling of the deck, and it would surprise me because I know that New Japan doesn't go for these big moves very often. They're very calculated about when they do things like this, but if they sense that maybe the product is growing stagnant or whatever and they need a big change, you know, it could happen.
Yeah, and plus he just played a heel in that movie that they've been promoting and that just came out that he played in, so
yeah,
it's something that could fit. But to go to another question and go back to Mae Young Classic, seeing Toni Storm in the match that she was in and how she get love from the fans and stuff like that, do you think she'll be someone who's, I know people see her in NXT UK, but going on with their tournament and everything that they had and seeing how she has fandom over here, could she be somebody who just fast-tracked to the regular NXT and be one of their future potential big six or like SmackDown, like the SmackDown six with men years ago, but be NXT six women with her, Bianca Belair, Sheree Ayo, and all the rest?
I think she absolutely fits in with NXT right now. You know, I think she's good enough for the main roster right now. But I think they probably want her as the standard bearer for the UK version of NXT. I don't think they want to drain that brand of talent before it even gets off the ground. So there, you know, there's always the possibility, and we don't really know what the association between the two NXTs are going to look like. We don't know if the main roster is going to eventually pull from the NXT UK brand. It really hasn't even gotten off the ground yet, so it's so hard to say. But certainly, Toni Storm has the talent to be on the main roster, let alone the what would you call, I suppose, the regular NXT. Frank, do you agree with that?
I totally agree. I think they're going to want to establish this UK brand and get it off the ground before you start making any kind of moves. And, you know, she is certainly a foundational piece to that. I'm interested, like you brought up, Greg, and you hit on something. I'm interested to see, I guess, sort of the movements between NXT and NXT UK. You know, because let's just say you have someone in NXT UK like Toni Storm, for example. Does her going to NXT, you know, proper, does that constitute a promotion? You know what I'm saying? Is it constitute a promotion or is it a lateral move? It'll be interesting to see the dynamic between the two. Mm-hmm. You know, or are they going to look at NXT UK and NXT separately and say, okay, you know what? You know, we have this, we have this over here, we have this product over here, and we have this, you know, Toni Storm or whomever on the UK product. Well, this one's ready for the main roster and just kind of shoot them up to the main roster directly from UK. Mm-hmm. Are they going to be these two separate brands where, you know, and I'm sure you're going to have some crossing over. I'm sure there will be, and I'm sure it's something that could work. But I don't know that there's going to be, you know, movement of, you know, like one to the other and then the main roster. I think they'll be separate. They'll cross-pollinate. And then if somebody's ready for Raw and SmackDown, don't bring them up directly from, you know, that particular group.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how this plays out if and when the NXT UK brand fully gets off the ground. Anything else for us tonight, Darrell?
One more thing. And going back to that Mae Young and the crossing over of NXT UK, I was just thinking, because you have the finals for the Mae Young tournament coming up and for Evolution, mm-hmm. and with people speculating that you might have Shayna Baszler maybe going up that night, And so it won't be a lower period and you just have two, maybe top women. You would need one of those women to come out, whoever wins, and maybe the person who's don't win. Just like last year, you had two stars come out of there. You would want two and hit the ground running in the regular NXT to join maybe Kairi Sane and Bianca Belair and start some type of thing so you can keep it going and keep the spice. So that's why I was thinking somebody like Toni Storm would just go straight over since she's major popular right now and something like that. So that was my whole theory on that. But going into my last question, the two shows that they're promoting, the Super Show and the Crown Jewel or whatever, the two Super House shows is what I'm calling them. Going off of what they did at the Greatest Royal Rumble, and yes, they tried to play with Roman Reigns having another reason why he should challenge for the title. But if you look at how all the matches played out, they really didn't make sense in storyline sense. That's why it was difficult for them to play it out in the long run. Now we have feuds that could be ended in those shows. Do you think that since they're having feuds going on, that would be continuation and making it a long drawn process that get convoluted and hurt, or maybe end too soon because they're on those shows? And do you trust WWE to continuously book the way they're doing with how they're doing these Super House shows and making them feel important, but when they get there, they don't treat it important?
Yeah. That's a tough question. I don't think it's you can make a blanket statement about the show. I think there might be some matches on the show where maybe things do end. Because you got to remember, for a lot of these matches that will take place in, say, Australia, for example, on 10/6, that's
seconds.
The only pay-per-view major event for at least the men in October, because the October traditional pay-per-view spot has gone to Evolution. So you'll have the Saudi Arabia show on November 2nd, and then you'll have Survivor Series. But the show in Australia in October is going to be the only big one that month for at least the male members of the roster. So you may have some feuds end there and some that begin for either Survivor Series or for Crown Jewel. But I don't think you can go in and saying, well, you know, this is just going to be a stopover and there's going to be DQ finishes or anything like that for all the matches. But you also can't say there's going to be feuds ending for all these matches. I think, like most pay-per-views, it'll be a little of both. And, you know, the other thing is when you look at Super Showdown, a lot of these matches are not necessarily – you look at Shield versus Braun, Dolph, and Drew McIntyre. The Roman Braun feud will still go after that. You look at Lashley and Cena versus Elias and Owens. The Lashley and Owens feud will still go after that. So a lot of these are just kind of stopovers in the feud. They're not actually the one-on-one matches that would necessarily end a feud. Now you've got Daniel Bryan and The Miz, which is
seconds.
One-on-one. But we know that's probably going to go longer. Same with Styles and Joe. So I think there's going to be a mix. Frank, do you think that these shows will be just glorified house shows where nothing really gets advanced, or do you think these are going to be shows of import going forward?
I think Jarrell asked the key question. Do we trust WWE? And I think the simple answer to that is no. as far as I really think it depends on a lot of things. You know, for example, the WWE Championship, you know, are they going to put the title on Joe or are they going to keep it on AJ Styles? Now, as far as that feud goes, I don't have a strong feeling either way. I think AJ could retain. I actually could see AJ retaining all the way to WrestleMania. So, you know, if that's the case, that feud probably ends. As far as Daniel Bryan and Miz, that could go to WrestleMania, and I agree with Greg, and I say that too because you could actually see, you know, Daniel Bryan and Miz for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. Let's just say AJ loses it at some point to the Miz. You know, maybe he doesn't hold it to WrestleMania. Maybe he holds it to the Royal Rumble. Daniel Bryan wins the Royal Rumble, Daniel Bryan Miz at WrestleMania. You know, you could see something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned the Shield and Braun and, you know, McIntyre and Ziggler and all of them. That'll probably continue because I could actually see Seth and Dean working with Dolph and Drew for a while over the tag team championship. But they just have no tag teams, as we talked about earlier on. So you have that. What are some of the other matches at Showdown that I'm, what am I missing at Super Showdown? Styles, Joe, we talked about Brian, Miz, Shield. Oh yeah, Cena and yeah, I mean Lashley and Owens is going to continue. You know, we could see something down the line with Cena and Elias. You know, they always seem to revive that every so often. So you know, that could go on. So yeah, I mean, I could see some continuance after Super Showdown. As far as Crown Jewel, it depends on what it depends on what's in store, you know, because as Greg said, you have Survivor Series around the corner. Are they going to tie the two together? I don't know. I'll tell you what, Darrell, I'll give you an answer. I could see Crown Jewel being more of a glorified house show. I could see that being more of a glorified house show than anything else, because I think that show, they're going to gear more to what the Saudi prince wants, necessarily, more necessarily than what they actually want to do. So I could see that being more of a house show. I could see Super Showdown being a little more in furtherance of storylines coming up, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Okay. Because in my eyes, I don't see them want to do any title changes where they don't feel like all of their audience will be paying attention there. I know they did the NXT title at the one in Japan. They did that one. But that one's kind of different, and that's NXT. And they feel like that's a lower brand. That's not a main roster brand. So they were willing to do that because it generated buzz and conversation mm-hmm. about NXT. But I was feeling that this could be the end of the Samoa Joe feud with AJ, because I'm kind of feeling that they're going to give AJ that long run, and maybe the mid and how they built up on SmackDown this past week, that title shot, between Miz and Daniel, I'm feeling like they're going to give that to Miz and maybe start the build of Daniel Bryan, hopefully winning the Royal Rumble this year. I know you always get somebody to come on here to say maybe it's his year this year, but potentially leading up to him versus AJ and maybe a AJ heel turn. So now, what SmackDown really needs is that number one heel versus that number one babyface, and make them feel even more as a bigger show. And you could potentially have that steaming off a WrestleMania main event type of match between AJ and Daniel Bryan. What they couldn't do with AJ versus Shinsuke Nakamura, but you could do this year if you have those two guys meet. Then you can sprinkle in all the 2K gaming, how Daniel Bryan got more than AJ, who's the cover guy, and all of this and that. So that's sure. What my thinking of the whole thing.
Yeah it's sure. You could really take a deep dive into where things go from here and what to do with these guys coming off of these major shows, because you know, we've gotten one Saudi show under our belt, and we've seen how that was booked, and it felt important, and they plugged it a lot, but you came out of it with not a sense that a lot of important stuff happened, I guess. And we'll see if that's just a trend that continues. That could change. It all depends. So, Darrell, appreciate the call as always, and hope to hear from you again soon.
Okay, no problem. And y'all have a great night, man, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you, Darrell.
Nice to talk to you, Darrell.
Frank, you were right on Twitter earlier today when you said we may not have enough time to cover everything we wanted to cover, and that is exactly the case. But luckily, in the ensuing weeks, we should have enough time because Super Showdown isn't until October 6th, so we'll have another show to preview that. Evolution, October 28th, we'll have a couple shows to preview that, and then Crown Jewel on November 2nd, and of course, Bound for Glory on October 14th. So, Frank, always a good time chatting wrestling with you. Talk and tell the fans where they can find you on the Twitter machine.
Absolutely. So it's at Frank Pettiani, FrankPettiani. Give me a follow and let me know that you did so. I'll follow you back, and we'll chat the world of pro wrestling. And if you want to throw the Mets and the Giants in there too, why not? Most of the time it's not so good, although today it's good.
I was gonna say, still willing to talk about the Mets and Giants. That's a true fan right there.
There you go. And well, the Rangers are coming, so. It's usually positive there. The Knicks forget about it.
All right. Well, there you have it. Thank you to Frank for coming in and talking here on Wrestling Night in America. And thank, as always, to you, the fans, for listening. So until we meet again next week at the same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, here on PWTorchLivecast.com, I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, signing off for this Sunday, September 23rd, 2018.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.